legislative yeah. first.
Yeah, okay.
Take that
okay.
out.
Yeah. Okay. I was okay with it, but I wanted to discuss that. Let's see. And we talked about consumer. Oh, there was one other spot where the word consumer showed up, and that was in 808C. The commission specialists in assistive technology will identify assistive technology required by the consumer prior to entry into a business enterprise. Now, you'll notice most of the chapter, the word we use is not one that we typically have used, the word recipient. And that is directly from the VR's scope of services rule. And I really think it's a good word. Consumer can be any blind person. Mm-hmm. You know, it is any blind person. So even, you know, a client isn't, consumer doesn't hit, clients don't hit all consumers. And then you could be a client but not a recipient of self-employment services. And, or, you know, a client is somebody who's an applicant, but they aren't really a recipient of service yet. Anyway, I thought within the context of the rule, using the word recipient was a good idea. And so that's why I used it throughout, except here. And I think in this reference here, it would be better to identify assistive technology required by the recipient to entry into a business enterprise. Does that sound okay to everybody?
Yeah, sounds good to me. Mm-hmm.
We never use the word recipient. It's a foreign language to us, but I thought, we even, some of us use client and some of us use student in our training center. So.
Well, I noticed the program and commission seem to be kind of interchangeable too, and I was wondering, you know, why, is there a reason that we use this rule thing uses program?
So hopefully, whenever it says program or program funds, that is specifically the vocational rehabilitation program or component of what the commission does. And when I use the commission, it is more of, you know, kind of for reference to Nebraska Commission for the Visually Impaired, Blind and Visually Impaired, without saying the whole thing every time.
Okay, so there is a difference between program and commission, then. The program...
Yes.
Program means the specific...
Vocational Rehabilitation, yeah. Title I of the Rehab Act. I wonder if that's in our program, in the...
Definitions?
Thank you. A little brain cramp there. Program shall mean vocational rehabilitation services provided to eligible individuals served by the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired.
Yeah, so...
And commission is... I'm sorry.
So they just felt interchangeable to me. They probably weren't really.
Right. Now, I'm not saying there aren't some spots where we used one of them incorrectly, but that's what it's supposed to be. Okay. I'm going to flip through in order and see if there's other thing. Okay. Definitions. We later on in something or other, we refer to mental and physical impairments, mm-hmm. and I had not included those as definitions in section 2. And so I just added two short definitions. I added 2.12, mental impairment shall mean impairments produced by any mental or psychological disorder. And then, of course, then that changes some sequencing, but then the new 2.14, physical impairments shall mean those impairments produced by any physiological disorder or condition affecting one or more of the body systems. Now, in the VR rule, they go on into, they give a whole bunch of examples of both of those, and I really didn't feel like, I thought just these concise definitions was enough.
Yeah, because that's not our focus.
Right, which actually is why I had left them out in the first place, but then it is true referenced something about them. So, yeah. And then some numbers changed because of adding those.
Yeah.
Of course. And then, okay, here's something new. on scope of services, the 304 is financial assistance exclusions. Then 305 is medical services excluded. And actually, I think I should have. What I inserted, Kristen's comment was, you say what you won't pay with regard to medical services excluded, and then you jump to conditions and criteria for providing financial assistance for the diagnosis and treatment of physical and mental impairments. Conditions and criteria are that. And then it talks about impediment to employment and a few other things. But it never says that we will do any treatment of physical impairments. And that, again, was another, basically a part of Rule 72 that I had just deleted, thinking, well, we don't do much of that, so I'll delete that. But then I included the what we exclude, and then I included conditions where we would. And there are some times where we would do provide for some medical services. So she said it didn't read right, and so if we do want to have some conditions for doing this, for providing this assistance, we need to say what it is we will. So I'd like to read you this new section. Treatment of physical and mental impairments. The program will provide financial assistance for the diagnosis and treatment of physical and mental impairments that constitute a substantial impediment to employment, to the extent that financial support is not readily available from another, from a source other than the program, parens, such as through health insurance of the individual or comparable services and benefits, end parens. The purpose of diagnosis and treatment of physical and mental impairments is to eliminate or substantially reduce, within a reasonable period of time, the impediment to employment caused by as stable or slowly progressing disabling condition. That's not right. Within a period of time, the impediment to employment caused by a stable or slowly progressively disabling condition. So first, does that sound okay?
Well, the only thing, like for mental disorders, every community is required to have a community mental health agency that will provide free services and free medication.
Right, and that would be the comparable, that's why it says
comparable. So then actually you don't have to pay for it. Why you can put it down?
If there is anything. I mean, there are some communities that don't have it, or the person doesn't apply, or doesn't, isn't eligible, or...
I could only see maybe the only barrier would be transportation for a blind person, say, they live.
What if the state cuts all the funding to community-based mental health?
Well, they can't because it's in federal law.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, the only thing I see for a blind person, the barrier would be transportation. And like mental health agencies are required to provide transportation for those who don't have access to.
Of course, remember the physical, well, and I guess that gets into why we should.
Physical or mental.
Right. If we had the broader definition of mental impairments, which we could put back in.
It could be mental retardation.
Right. Brain.
Injury.
Yeah. They have impairments produced by any mental or psychological disorder, such as mental retardation, organic brain syndrome, emotional or mental illness, and specific learning disabilities. Now, so that is why your point, you know, probably is true for some parts of that, but not all of it. And, you know, maybe we should have the full thing. That one isn't so bad. It's just three lines. The physical impairments is what convinced me to try to make both of them shorter, which maybe is the wrong decision, but let me find that. Where is
it? Sometimes you try to make it shorter and it takes more work than you sleep.
It's true. Very true. And they say something like physical disabilities resulting from amputation, arthritis, autism, blindness, burn injury, cancer, cerebral palsy, cystic fibrosis, death. I mean, they go, it's like 10 lines.
Alphabetical order, even. Oh, boy.
Anyway, okay, here's the one specific to physical impairment shall mean those impairments produced by any physiological disorder or condition, cosmetic disfigurement, or anatomical loss affecting one or more of the body systems, which includes neurological, musculoskeletal, special sense organs, respiratory, including speech organs, cardiovascular, reproductive, digestive, genital, urinary, hemic, and lymphatic, skin, and endocrine systems. So I, in my simplistic mind, thought that body systems did the job for that. But I don't know what you think.
I think it does.
Okay. And as I look at it today, I think that the thing that says treatment of should be first before medical services excluded.
Mm-hmm.
And then have treatment, then medical services excluded, and then say conditions for providing.
Mm-hmm.
Either that or medical exclusion should be last. Should be treatment
yes.
first in the sequence, and then the conditions for doing it when we do it, and then last would be
don't when we don't.
Okay,
yeah.
That makes more sense. So that'll change that around. Thank you. Then we get into comparable services and benefits, procurement.
Well, I had a question about, kind of on the lines of, who we do or don't do.
Yes.
In that 1101, it says something about someone receiving commissioned services to operate a vehicle. When would that happen?
Yeah. Okay. Vehicle modification. I kind of debated on the wording in this section. I thought it was important to include for riding in the vehicle.
Yes, I agree.
And the only, we almost never do it, but I was imagining, it is conceivable that with a particular person that the what do you call the gadget? I'm blocking out the name.
Monocular or that?
No, it's just
bioptics.
The bioptics that lets you drive even though you're blind. That in the rare situation, it might be that a person with bioptics could achieve an employment goal, and they also use a wheelchair, so would need to have an adapted vehicle.
I can think of a for real case where I was working with somebody about 10 years ago, and he lived in a small town about 10 miles outside of Superior, and his goal was journalist. Okay. And at the time, he was working on a family farm. And so we set up a program where he completed a correspondence course in journalism while living there. And about the time when he was about ready to finish that up, he had a low vision evaluation, which I arranged. And to my surprise, it was recommended that he get a bioptic. And he did, and he was able to get an unrestricted license, which also surprised me, but
yes.
It really made a big difference.
Gary.
In terms of his goal, because, in rural Nebraska, journalism is not an easy career to pursue if you don't have a license. So, that kind of solved a lot of problems all at once, but that is the case we did have.
And that is why I put to write in or, if applicable, operate the vehicle. Because I didn't, I didn't want to go into a lot of depth about what we're talking about, but at the same time, I didn't want the rule to make it look like the person, any client, we certainly have clients that have very limited vision that drive And we don't think they should be driving, and we counsel with them, but that's, in the end, their choice.
I guess it still seems odd to me that we, that the commission would pay for that. I mean, I can see the commission, you know, helping with services that are related to blindness, but operating a vehicle isn't mm-hmm. related to blindness.
No. Part of this, I guess...
It really is related to blindness. If they're legally blind, it's because of their blindness they need it, and it's part of their job to be able to get to what they need to do to be successful. It relates, in my head, anyway.
It removes the vocational barrier.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, but I don't want to be in front of anybody that can't see where they're driving.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, when Mary Sue was in West Virginia years ago, they almost insisted that she get a bioptic and mm-hmm. learn to drive, and she said, no, she doesn't have that much vision. She doesn't.
Well, that's good. Usually it's the opposite, yeah. That we try to counsel people.
They had quite a hair 34 years ago when somebody wanted to drive, and they took the Department of Motor Vehicles to court. I don't know how that case ever came out.
Yeah, I understand how the driving relates to employment and all. I mean, all of that makes sense to mm-hmm. me.
This could be something where...
Because once somebody qualifies to drive,
they're no longer
blind. They still qualify for services?
Some of them are legally blind.
Carlos looked into that question, and I believe... Wasn't the answer to that yes?
Well, if they are legally blind, yeah.
Yeah.
And if they get their vision back, the fact that, like, let's assume that we pay for physical restoration, and they get their vision back, they are not blind anymore. Mm-hmm. But we started an IPE, and we need to finish the employment goal. What I think, I don't think, my personal belief is that having it in the rule is like encouraging, and maybe we don't need to have it there. That doesn't mean that we don't pay for it in case it arrives.
Mm-hmm. So if we just had to write in and take out the operate?
It just looks like, because a person I would think or hope anyway would be on their way to not being a recipient of commission services,
right.
If they're at the point where they're going to operate a vehicle, I can identify with keeping, you know, the commission keeping its word and following somebody through to the end of their IPE. But I also think that when it comes to the point where somebody no longer qualifies, I mean, when a doctor gives somebody something that cures them of whatever, they don't still continue to.
There could come a day with GPSs and computers.
Having whatever that situation is that wasn't cured before,
It seemed like the Supreme Court ruled that if you're not blind, if your vision is corrected to a certain level of it, so that if you can have corrected vision, no matter how it's corrected, then you're no longer blind or visually impaired.
Thank
you're
her.
Not entitled to the services.
Yeah. Well, that, and that may be the thing to do, and I'm glad you brought up this section, because it was one that I thought, well, I'll just put it out there. I'm not lobbying for this to be in here.
I know.
I'm glad I didn't start. I'm glad you brought it up. Should we say just that enable him or her to ride in and are essential to achieve the employment outcome?
Yeah.
Now,
right in.
Okay, there I think if we've got a person who is blind and physically disabled to the extent that they cannot get to where they're going to a job without a vehicle that's modified.
Yeah, okay.
Now, the first choice, and we haven't talked about there's some criteria for procuring services and goods. That are kind of a sequence, you don't immediately go to a modified van for somebody. You know, you look at drivers learning how to get on the bus, you know, things like that, mm-hmm. that are different ways of achieving the end.
Yeah, paratransit and all that.
Right. So, but if there's this, you know, you get up to this point and this is the only thing that's going to get the person to work is having their own vehicle, and then whether it's a, they have their own, they have a driver or they have a family member that drives them or whatever, that they need a special vehicle, then having it in rural protects us from, because I mean it does narrow what might be, what we might otherwise have to do.
You know, I guess, does it narrow it or does it actually broaden it? Because it seems like up to this point we could say, well, you know, that's not a blindness-related thing, so, you know, assistive technology or somebody or the League of Human Dignity or whoever in the world, you know, is, you know, really involved in doing those kinds of things that relate to other disabilities would be reasonable way to go to get something like that done that isn't really specifically a blindness related.
Yeah, but actually because we are the agency for the blind, regardless of any other disability, we have to cover any obstacles they have in order to achieve their vocational goal.
Because that's the primary disabling condition or something?
Not necessarily, not even if it's the primary disabling condition, but just the fact that they qualify for our services.
For a long time we did use that primary disability.
Yeah, we did. I'm an old fashioned.
We ended up with circular arguments because generally people in rehab think there's nothing worse than blindness. Mm-hmm. And generally we all think there's nothing worse than being in a wheelchair or, you know, deafness and some of these other things. And so we'd get nowhere, you know, and so we came to terms with this several years ago, and we developed an understanding and agreement between the commission and Voc Rehab, which is that we are the commission for the blind. We serve people who are blind, and then including, we serve the whole person who is blind. And if their impediment to employment is based on the blindness and being a quadriplegic, we serve the whole person still. And we still would look for comparable benefits. Mm-hmm. You know, they would apply for League of Human Dignity. We would contact the this and that and the other thing. But they wouldn't be sloughed off to Voc Rehab for that part. So that's...
That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Another example, too, this is another real case. There was a woman who has a perfect intact inner ear, but there was no canal that led to the outside. This was on her left side. So the inner ear had no access to stimulation from an outer ear. And so we were in a position to, and she had no insurance. So we were able to help with the corrective surgery to create an outer ear for that person, which of course enabled her to hear much better, which related to her ability to travel independently.
Yeah. Okay. You know, that makes sense. So I'd still stop at the right end or whatever, however you want to put that.
Yeah, I agree with that. That makes sense. And one of the point, you know, at first even when we were all looking at these, we kind of thought, oh, we don't even need the home mods and the vehicle mod sections. But, you know, as, well, Vicki Rasmussen even pointed it out, and she's client assistant. She's all for, you know, making sure that we're doing right by clients. She says, you know, if you don't have that in there, then... The person who wants to have you buy a $150,000 van for them can, you know, you can't show them in rule what pieces of that you will and won't do. And then Kristen Peterson also said it only takes one or two major vehicle mods to, you know, really blow your entire budget. So
what is servo steering or whatever that is?
That's some special technology that, you know, lets somebody without the use of their hands and legs operate the vehicle.
So are we still going to do that kind of thing?
No, this says that we won't, or it should.
That's right.
And that's why, because I mean, that gets back to they shouldn't be steering the vehicle if they're blind.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
I don't know. Let's see.
But, you know, a person can make the point, too, that they need a vehicle with special accommodations because, they still need to get to and from a place of work, even if they're not driving it, you know.
And that's in here.
We're okay with that.
Okay. I have a question. Mm-hmm. Maybe just to get a break as well. What happens if somebody invents a car that blind people can drive? And we want to buy the car? Mm-hmm. Because that's what scientists are talking these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, with the GPS and computers, I mean, it's, you know, the next 50 years.
Well, I'll tell you what, if we get by without revising our rule for 50 years, I won't mind at all. Not that I'm going to be here in 50 years, but yeah, as technology changes, you know, there might be some things that we would rethink.
So are you thinking we should put it back in
no.
case of that?
No, I'm...
That's a reason not to
have Carlos that question.
Operate...
I'm sorry.
But he's not answering.
No, I wasn't afraid to ask, but I thought you were asking. No, I just... My inclination is not to have that section there, but on the other hand, I also think we should. So that's why I guess you have to make a decision.
Okay, I want to go back to Section 5 and 508. Equipment loans, the way it reads in the draft you've seen, says the program will provide to recipients or make equipment and or tools available for loan for the purposes of. Kristen suggests we insert a phrase, so it says make equipment or tools that are necessary for achieving the individual's vocational goal available for loan for the purpose of. Just again, clarifying, if we do equipment, you know, it's those that are necessary for achieving vocational goals.
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. Let me flip through to my other changes. Okay, student loan defaults. She felt this was not too clear. Let me just read the new way. Well, is that okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've inserted a sentence and a couple of phrases. So the new way is, students who have defaulted on a student loan will not be provided program support for vocational training. Students who apply for a Pell Grant will not be accepted for a Pell Grant if they have defaulted on a student loan. Denial of a Pell Grant for this reason will be indicated on the award letter issued by the financial aid office the student has applied to. If the student is refusing to pay back the loan, they will not be provided academic support unless the existence of extenuating circumstances can be documented, such as poor health, exorbitant medical bill, or the inability to secure substantial employment as determined by the deputy director. And the only change is the first sentence to clarify, because it kind of jumps into the students who apply for part has more to do with the school or the U.S. Department of Education's determination that they will not be accepted for a Pell Grant. Mm-hmm. And the new first sentence relates to us, that if they've defaulted, they will not be provided program support for vocational training. But then it goes on to kind of explain. So does it read okay this new way?
I think so.
Yeah, other than the grammatical student and they, mm-hmm. But But otherwise, I think so. Now, if somebody gets refused...
Wait a minute. It's students who apply will not be accepted if they... That's not a singular and a plural.
No, that one's okay. Seems like there was another one later on in that, in somewhere in there, but maybe not. But if the... Now, if somebody gets refused a Pell Grant, is that a one-time, okay, never, ever again? How often can you do that?
Well, you apply every year.
Okay.
And I suppose if they've defaulted on a student loan and never repay it back, then that would be they'd always be ineligible. If they get refused a Pell Grant and they say, oh gosh, I should have paid that and go pay it, then I suppose the next time they apply, they're eligible. I'm pretty sure that's true.
Okay, Inga talked about health reasons for not paying back the student loan.
Right.
And would that be an exception?
Yes. So unless the existence of extenuating circumstances can be documented, such as poor health, exorbitant medical bills, you know, whatever situations that... Yeah. Not okay like that, or...
I think so.
I think so, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let me see. Other changes.
In the Appendix A, when it's talking about transportation, you know, mileage and stuff.
Yes.
Now, there were amounts there. And I was wondering if that's some kind of federal or some kind of, like, 20 cents a mile and $20 per day meal allowances.
Right. The reasons those are in there are kind of, if we reflect back to the name of this chapter, which is Scope of Services and Cost Containment.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to, you know, basically make sure that there are enough program funds available to serve all customers, all consumers who apply. And you know, once you're into a plan with people, you're required to provide what you provide to fulfill their plan. But if you establish some things to help contain those costs, then that's where this is at. And I know this isn't the one you bring up, but like with the cost for the eye examination, for the eligibility, basically we have a set thing we'll pay, but basically we'll pay whatever the doctor charges. This would say we'll pay the Medicaid level. Of course, to implement, we'll have to do some letters to physicians, and we'll have to establish that from whatever point on, that is what we'll pay, and so forth. With transportation, you know, I guess the sense is that we've kind of gone toward, or until pretty recently, we would pay the amount the IRS allows, and we would, for meals, we would pay the amount the state allows for staff and travel. But in a sense, you know, the having it be set at an amount kind of establishes that this is what the program will pay. It doesn't mean you have to eat on only $20 a day, but you know that the program funds are going to pay that much. And so it's really a cost containment issue.
Well, I just was wondering if it would make more sense to say, you know, such and such percent of whatever it is. Because how long is this rule going to be? I mean, because, you know, like
if... I know what you mean. Because prices... $20 today is not what it was 10 years ago or 10 years from now.
Are we saying that we're paying, giving students meal allowance to go to school?
No, we're not talking about academic support.
We have skipped.
Okay, I'm still behind a ways.
No, I'm glad you asked that.
Can we just reference, rather than put dollar amounts in the rules, and make that part of a policy that changes from time to time, say subject to the rules of the director or whatever, or the standards, policy
yeah.
set by the director?
Yes, that might be better. Because across the board, we've tried to avoid real tight, you know, specifics.
Because nobody's going to go to the rules to see these amounts. These are going to be given to them through some policy statement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see if there's some... mileage, lodging, and meals.
Reimbursements will be set by the director on an annual basis.
As set. But even that, let's don't have it in rule, because then if the you get a change in directorship and the year goes by like it does, and then you don't annually review. As set by internal commission policies and procedures.
From time to time.
But then doesn't specifically mention lodging, does it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does.
Other costs not to exceed state lodging. Yeah. And I want to add, mileage, lodging, and meals, as set by internal commission policies and procedures, mm-hmm. not to exceed state rates. Because mm-hmm. it should never even be at... Okay. Great, that's good.
And my only other question on this particular chapter was in the Appendix B that service providers must be at least 18 years of age and not be a relative or family member or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that applies to... to what?
Reader.
Well, let's see, do we define service provider? I think it's referring to third-party service, but let's check. Nope, we don't, let's see, provider, no, we don't have provider, and we don't have service provider. All service providers, let's see if the... 72 for BR. No, they don't either. Well, and that reminds me of my little nonprofit business, which, I mean, we. Community Advocates that I'm on the board of is a service provider and sells click rules to the commission. And so if this goes into rule, then it would be, and of course I've made sure folks all the way along and asked, is this a conflict? And so...
Yeah, also there are some occasions in which maybe a student is to have a brother or wife or spouse to read because there is no reader available.
Well, and I had that problem as a student. This thing was in effect, and it was a real pain because there were lots of times when that was the best thing, and unless I could figure out a way to get money somehow to pay my family member, they ended up doing it.
But let me back you up. This is cannot be a family member or relative of an employee of the commission.
Not
the family member of the client.
Still, if you have become employed and you are and you work there or whatever, and you have things like that need to be done or whatever, and that person is qualified and good at it and all that, what is the problem?
Let's talk about who is being read to. Let's talk about readers. And this is for providing the reading service to clients. It can be a family member of the client, but it can't be a family member of Carlos.
So that's even a change over the
that's
years.
That's a problem. Yeah. I mean, sometimes Carlos's wife has been a driver, or other people's spouses or children have been drivers and readers, and so.
And so what we're saying is that can't happen.
Maybe we should take that out. I think having 18 years of age is a good idea.
I don't have a problem with that.
And not an employee of the commission. I don't know.
It's one thing to expect a family member to do things for a family member, but when the only reason they're doing it is because they're blind, that kind of gets to our central situation that we're...
Well, it is similar in a way to, I mean, when you're talking about clients or when you're talking about employees, when a client becomes can become an employee after a while, do they, if part of their paid support, or, you know, whatever you call it, system has been that, do you just kind of redirect because you got a job at a particular place? That wouldn't happen if you got a job at Kmart or somewhere.
Right. Well, and maybe because of all the what-ifs that we're sitting here thinking of, maybe we should get rid of all of that and just have the requirement for adulthood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And get rid of the rest of it. I'm okay with that.
I certainly am, because I've lived with some of the mm-hmm. problems of that system.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
I think we're all okay with that.
Well, the good news is that was the longest of the three chapters.
Yes, and the most substantive, truly.
I hope so.
Before we go away from this one, I would say that if you all are comfortable with what we have so far, that it would be nice to have a motion and a vote on moving this into the hearing draft stage.
So moved.
Second, third,
passed.
Okay, excellent.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Great. Well done. You want me to talk about chapter two?
Well, sure. No, but...
No.
Now, that one is the VR one, right?
Appeal.
This is, procedures for formal review of vocational rehabilitation determinations. Oh, I have a question. When JAWS or whatever screen reader you use comes to that little symbol that means section, does it just say graphic or does it say section? There's a cute little squiggly thing that means section. And in all the other laws, you will see that it has that little word, that little symbol before the numbers under the column statutory authority in the contents.
It depends on what a thing is, what JAWS says. I mean, if it looks like a bullet, it may say that. If it looks like something else, it may just say graphic or whatever. And since I turned these into Braille files and put them in here, I didn't read them with JAWS, so...
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't notice.
You
I just read continuous red and just...
But if it's truly one of those symbols that's a graphic, you can have JAWS, you can label it so JAWS will say section. So I don't
okay.
Yeah, you can.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I had kind of avoided using the little thingy because I thought it would be...
Yeah,
so would it be better just to leave it in and do it the way the other, the way the attorneys like to see it?
It's not going to hurt. I mean,
okay.
Robert said you can do a set JAWS to read a particular graphic. Okay. Just call it whatever you want it to.
Okay, so Dan, you'll make that note that we'll fix that on all of them. You know, the other thing I wanted to do that I have not done yet, but I wanted to go through all three of these chapters and make sure that in the definitions we're consistent in our wording of terms that appear more than once. And, you know, I'm pretty sure there aren't any big problems, but I do want to kind of check those for consistency. So is it acceptable for us to do that? And if